The Writer Files, a member of the Podglomerate Network.
You know, as preamble to almost everything that we write in into script form, it first starts with the short story, and that is just how we better understand. We're both voracious readers and love books and love short stories. So we wrote Antebellum as a short story first, and then wrote the script, because that's just our way in.
Greetings, scribes. You are tuned back into The Writer Files. I am your grateful host, Kelton Reed, wishing you positivity, productivity, and prosperity per usual. And this week, writer-director duo and activists Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz, aka Bush and Renz, took a time out to chat with me about storytelling to amplify social justice, hanging out with Jay-Z, and why you need to have the stamina to make it. The duo has been together for 12 years and got their start in advertising in Miami. After losing the taste for producing champagne commercials, they pivoted to their passion for telling powerful stories of the disenfranchised, marginalized, and underrepresented. After their police brutality PSA Against the Wall, starring Michael B. Jordan, went viral, their paths shifted toward Hollywood. Their chart-topping timely debut feature is Antebellum, starring Janelle Monáe, newly available on Hulu, a psychological thriller showcasing the stark reality of being Black in America. Variety named the film a top 10 best film of 2020 and called it a wickedly effective horror movie metaphor for white supremacy's enduring grip on American society. Bush and Renz's mission is to amplify weighty social justice issues, including climate change, LGBTQ and women's equality, voter suppression, mass incarceration, and more. In this file, Bush and Renz and I talked about their unique perspectives and how they came to work in politics and social justice, how Antebellum began as a short story, the exhaustive research that went into their first film, and the prescience that made them believers, what it's like to be tapped by HBO, and more. Stay safe and stay sane out there. And if you're a fan of The Writer Files, please click subscribe to automatically see new interviews as soon as they're published, and leave us a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts to help other writers find us. All right, we're rolling on The Writer Files, and I am thrilled today to be joined by some very special guests. I've got the screenwriter, director, activist duo, Bush and Renz, and of course, who I'm referring to here is Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz. How are you today, guys?
Oh, we're doing pretty good. It's nice and sunny, and we're thankful for that. How are you?
You know, surviving the blustery mountains here in Denver. But I understand you guys are still kind of on lockdown there in LA, because you're in LA County, right?
Yeah, we're in LA County proper, and you know, the COVID rates, unfortunately, here, just, you know, we suspect where it was coming from, because a couple months back, what sounded like a concert, like a stadium concert right down the hill from where we live, and I was looking off the balcony trying to figure out where it was coming from. And it was like it had to have been a 2,000 person wedding.
Oh my God.
And so I think like people have been doing things at their houses or like Airbnbs that they, you know, the city has advised them, or it's not, you're not supposed to do that at all. But anyway, yeah, we've just been trying to like keep our spirits up. We're really, you know, grateful to have a roof over our heads, and there are a lot of people suffering at this time, so we don't have anything to complain about.
And Christopher, is that your voice that I'm hearing?
No, that was me. That was Gerard.
Okay, Gerard. Okay. Thanks, Gerard.
This is me. This is Christopher.
Christopher, we're getting you in stereo here. So, thanks guys for doing this. I really appreciate your time, and I can't wait to talk about your fantastic debut, and then kind of all the writing things you got in the pipeline. But before we dig into Antebellum, let's talk about your superhero origin story, kind of as a duo, and kind of some of your earlier work, and, you know, kind of just more of the kind of social justice piece that you all are kind of deeply committed to.
Yeah. Glad to chat about it. I mean, we've been together for 12 plus years now, and we met in Miami. And at that time, I think it was like 4 days into hanging out, we came up with this idea about an alien story. And C, Christopher, I call him C, said, like, let's go back to your place and write it. And we did. And we thought it was pretty good. And we wanted to make a film of it. We had all these ideas. But we looked at each other and said, you know, I don't think that it's realistic that we're going to pack up all of our stuff on a wing and a prayer. And we've only just met and moved to Los Angeles and like make it happen. So we're both pretty pragmatic people, albeit sometimes we are overly optimistic where we shouldn't be. And I guess sometimes what we're thinking or what we're hoping catches up to the vision of that optimism. Hmm. But we at that point said, look, you know, this was in the middle of the economic implosion of like 2007, 2008. And yeah, we said, let's start our own shop, because a lot of the other advertising agencies, because that was our business, were not, you know, really focused on digital and social nearly as much as we saw where the opportunity was. So we started our little shop. And at the time, you know, so many people were underwater with their condos and investments. And this gentleman rented us a hotel room that was right on the beach on Ocean Drive for pennies on the dollar. Like, I mean, it made us look like we were super legit when we really didn't have anything. But for the first year and a half or so, we really couldn't give ourselves away. And we just kept at it and kept at it. Christopher still held on to his full-time job at Crispin Porter Bogusky, which at the time was still the hottest advertising shop in the country. And he had survived layoff after layoff. And so we were grateful that I could try to keep the ship afloat during the day while he was working and then moonlighting at night with the shop. So then we eventually signed some pretty prestigious luxury clients, and that was great. But you know, we had to hire, and we started building this whole thing out, and I was growing increasingly sort of I don't know if despondent is the right word, but I was definitely disenchanted with all of it, and I didn't want to sell champagne for the rest of my life. And I said to Christopher, like, I think, you know, we've lost the idea of what our original tenant was in this union, in doing this work, which was to you know, tell stories that could really amplify a whole host of issues that are really important in the world. And we're, you know, it's great that we've got Harry Winston in Vogue and all of these things, but that's not what we set out to do. And Christopher said, you know what, I feel the same way, and you know, I'm glad that we're talking about it. Let's just figure what we can do next to really go back to what we originally set out to do. So then we had a connection that introduced us to Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was at the time the head of the DNC. And she spent several hours with us in our office. And, you know, we said we'd like to lend our talent. I mean, not to our resources. I don't want to sound self-aggrandizing. lend our resources to, you know, trying to help you in any way that we can. And she needed help, and the DNC needed help activating Black voters in the midterm elections in Florida. Trayvon Martin had been murdered at the hands of that vigilante, which I don't speak his name. And then, you know, we put together a whole campaign that looked like H&M ads with this beautiful little kid in a bulletproof vest all over Florida. With an accompanying video, and Young Turks picked it up, then CNN, then MSNBC, and it went viral. And we had the NRA picketing underneath our billboards, and it was, you know, really controversial and provocative. And that was the point, that you shouldn't have to buy your kid a bulletproof vest to go to school and protect them from the very people that are meant to protect and serve us. And then after Mr. Harry Belafonte called, which was really a seminal moment for us as a duo in terms of the trajectory of where we were going, And mm-hmm. he said, look, I don't have a lot of, you know, this is a nonprofit. I don't have unlimited, you know, financial resources, but I definitely want you guys to do a PSA for us. You can write and create anything you want. I have enough to fly you and a small crew to Atlanta. And then you'll have access to several high profile people if they're willing to participate in it. And we said, okay. So we went to Atlanta. Michael B. Jordan and Danny Glover and, you know, all of these people were so lovely and agreeing to lend their talent to this PSA that we did. And we didn't want to do sort of a typical PSA. You know, we had written something where we wanted to pluck the empathetic chord in people looking at folks that they celebrated and respected in the exact same positions of those everyday Black Americans who were being murdered and brutalized at the hands of certain police officers. So that went viral, but that went viral in a way that we really hadn't expected that it would. And The Hollywood Reporter, we're living in Miami, but at, you know, still The Hollywood Reporter and Variety and all of these people, because of the actors that were involved in it and Harry Belafonte, it got a lot of traction and people out here were kind of asking like, who are these guys? But then from there, we were called by Shaka Pilgrim, who was then the president of Roc Nation. And she said that she'd like to get us out to LA and if we could be there in 2 days. And she really didn't get into a lot of detail as to why, but we said, okay. And we flew to LA and we kind of kicked around all day waiting for her call to tell us what to do next. And then she sent us an address because we had a red eye flying back to Miami that night. So we really needed to get this meeting over with, whatever it was going to be. So we went to this location in Hollywood that she had for us. We waited another 45 minutes and then she brought us into a room and Jay-Z was sitting there waiting for us. And then he gets up and says, you know, hey, Gerard and Chris, big fan. I'm going to run to the bathroom and then we can talk. And Chris and I are like, what's going on? What is this? And we just were not prepared for that at all. And then, you know, Jay is just the warmest. We can't say enough about him because he's just a genius, but also very quiet, very reserved, very thoughtful. He really looks at you when you talk to him, and he really is listening. And then he played us his entire 444 album and before it came out. And anyway, make a long story bearable. we ended up, you know, he invited us to work on 444, the album, visuals. And so we did that. And then we decided now is the time that, you know, after 9.5 years together at that point, let's pull the trigger and make this move to Los Angeles. And so that's what happened. And we moved to LA and within a year and a half, we had our first, we were shooting our first movie.
Crazy. And that first movie is Antebellum.
Yep. Antebellum.
Antebellum. Is it is powerful and it makes a pretty impactful statement, I think. How prescient do you feel that the film is today? Like if we had had this interview a week ago or 2 weeks ago, it probably would have been a different answer, right?
Yeah, you know, neither Christopher nor myself would say that we're new age. Or necessarily religious. I was raised Catholic and went to Catholic school, but I'm not a practicing Catholic. But we started to realize that there's so much more to the world than what you can see and feel, and that there's something else going on if you really tune in to the promptings and experience the world beyond, you know, the five senses. And so I think. No, we had no idea that the movie was going to prove as prescient as it was, you know, in September and then now almost prophetic, you know, today with the Capitol. But at the same time, I think because of what we were seeing on the ground, what we were hearing, even 10 years ago, we felt like the country was going in this direction. And I think that people had been sedated into believing in the Obama years that the country had moved so beyond our origins of gross racial inequity and inequality, and most specifically as it relates to Black people. We didn't believe that, and we saw it and felt it and heard it on the ground in the work that we were doing in politics, in the work that we were doing in social justice. And, you know, it's sad that we're at this place where there are so many different Americas and different perspectives and views of America that have taken us away from our shared values. And I think, and Christopher thinks, that that may very well have to do with the X factor of social media, a new technology at the time and now, that has helped greatly metastasize this collective psychopathy at a pace that none of us could have expected.
Wow. That's pretty profound. And I think, you know, I guess when you think about, you know, films like, or documentaries like The Social Dilemma,
Exactly.
Which kind of does a very good job of describing kind of these filter bubbles that we have all come to kind of live in, right? Something like the, like utterly, you couldn't imagine what happened with the, you know, I guess we're calling it the insurrection or the assault on the Capitol here in the United States, that, you know, these scenes that were unfolding were just not something that I don't think the collective, or that our collective kind of awareness could process right away, because it's like, oh, holy shit. like these people, they're out there and proudly waving the Confederate flag in, you know.
Yeah, we've always thought that the most horrific aspect of Antebellum, the story and the film, is its plausibility. And unfortunately, with all these events, it doesn't seem that out of the realm.
I think what a lot of people missed with what happened at the Capitol, which I think is most definitely at the same sort of horrific standard, if we can call it that, as 9/11. It was really that disturbing to watch unfold. Christopher and I were watching just to see Ted Cruz and Josh Hawley with their objections against, you know, the vote of the people, just like everybody else. We did not have the foggiest idea that something so horrific was unfolding, and that the president of the United States was igniting an insurrection in real time. But what we know is that once Obama was elected, for a certain type of white American, they felt that if they had nothing else, if they were poor or lower middle class or didn't have the same education or what they felt like were the same opportunities, the thing that they did have was they were white. And to be white meant something to them and meant something within this country and gave them a certain privilege that superseded anyone else, regardless of their education or socioeconomic background, just on the basis of their whiteness, that they were ahead. And when they felt that was slipping through their fingers, that the currency of whiteness was being devalued, that is what sent them into a tailspin. It is not just economics. It is about their need for us to be Black so they can be white.
Hmm. Yeah, that's important. So, you know, kind of looking at Antebellum, the film, and kind of going a little meta on this one, because obviously you wrote the film quite a while ago, and I want to talk about that process. But when you were writing the movie, you know, we're not going to do any spoilers on this show, because if listeners haven't seen Antebellum, do find it streaming wherever fine premium films are streamed. presently. But the kind of talk about, because you have imprinted into the message of the main character, who is also a lauded sociologist, bestselling author, whose books explore disenfranchisement, right, of Black people, that you kind of have written within the meta pieces that, you know, she's talking about kind of this roadmap to revolution for marginalized communities. Yeah, talk about the writing of the film prior to the production stuff, kind of what the message was that you were going for there, and then kind of the meta piece, kind of, you know, like how it's how it's all unfolded is very interesting.
You know, we thought, as first of all, you know, as preamble to almost everything that we write in into script form, it first starts with the short story, and that is just how we better understand. We're both voracious readers and love books and love short stories. So we wrote Antebellum as a short story first, and then wrote the script, because that's just our way in. But as we were writing it, the script anyway, you know, we thought about, like, even if I look at CNN today and I see Abby Phillip, or I see Joanne Reed, or I see, you know, there's so many extraordinary Black women that I think when Chris and I would read some of the gutter comments on Twitter as it relates to, you know, the insult that certain white people would feel in a Black woman like an Abby Phillip having the audacity to be so poised and so educated and so direct in her eloquence in describing what she was seeing as a journalist and as a thought leader. And and for us, you know, even if you look back to some of the awful things that were said about Michelle Obama by these people, you know, there was a fantasy of subjugation, of bringing them down a notch, of making them, you know, putting them back in their place, if you will. And that was one of the reasons that, you know, when you think about Antebellum and as we were writing it with how quiet, you know, you have to be on the plantation as a kidnapped, enslaved person, that no one, you know, these people don't want to be reminded of your education or your position. They want you to be, like the great Toni Morrison said, if in order for you to stand tall, I have to be on my knees, there is something very wrong with you. And that is at the heart of what we're really exploring. One of the main components, aspects of what we are exploring with Antebellum, the coping persona, and, you know, and this woman who has written this book as a roadmap to revolution, in saying that it's like a Stacey Abrams, we are the future. Our time is now. We wrote that, years ago. And now Stacey Abrams, that's the name of her book. Our time is now. Crazy. That's how things started to just unfold and become, and what was written then started to match what was happening now. So I can't explain exactly how it unfolded in the way that it did. It just, you know, that for whatever sort of reason, that became our focus.
Amazing. Yeah. And I'll just mention this incredible cast. Of course, Antebellum stars Janelle Monáe, the truly talented Janelle Monáe, as a modern day author transported back into the 19th century as a slave in the Southern United States, come face to face with her ancestors and Bates questions around fate. Of course, I want to talk a little bit, if we can, just about your influences, but, there was one line that really stood out to me. And of course, Jack Huston is a fantastic actor as well. I didn't mention the entire cast, but you got Jack Huston, Jenna Maloney, and a lot of other incredible actors. But this one line, "The ballot box won't go our way," I don't want to do any spoilers. But I mean, like, I'm just listening to this and watching this film, obviously, and just enraptured by the kind of everything, you know, just like the payoff and. Just the everything about the film is truly, truly fantastic.
The ballot box will go our way. The courts will follow.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
When we wrote that line, like at the time, I mean, we can't explain it, but it's the timing is really, that's what I mean when I was saying at the earlier in our conversation, you know, where we didn't necessarily believe certain things. Now we are more inclined to believe in that there is the possibility that there's something else at play, you know?
Amazing. Well, okay. So let's talk about your filmic kind of, DNA. And, you know, I got pieces of, Stanley Kubrick and, you know, some Shining stuff there.
Yep.
Big fan. But then, some Jordan Peele, of course, hard to miss that. But then, talk some about, you know, I hope you haven't been compared to Quentin Tarantino.
No.
There's some ways you can't help but be influenced somewhat
you have
by that.
To be. I mean, first, Quentin Tarantino for us, like, I just think he's brilliant. And we love the fact that he is, you know, from day one, exciting and daring and singular. And, for us, we look at, you know, we love so many films to come out of that 70s, early 80s canon. We love Invasion of the Body Snatchers. We love, Looking for Mr. Goodbar to Ordinary People to real character driven films, but at the same time, Stanley Kubrick, I mean, I think Christopher and I have watched Eyes Wide Shut maybe 30 times.
Mm-hmm. Definitely our Christmas movie.
It's our Christmas movie. we watch it. We love it. But, you know, I think that for us, it's all about not necessarily like taking all of those influences on a subconscious level that really seep into, you know, who you are as an artist, and who we are as a unit, as a duo, but trusting yourself. And trusting your own instincts and your own choices, because I think that the movie-going audience deserves to have something that feels unique to the filmmaker when we're at a time that so much has been homogenized and it all feels recycled or some version of the same thing. And mm-hmm. as film fanatics, you know, we're always looking at and toward filmmakers that are doing something that feels really unique to them. And Quentin Tarantino most certainly would be a living director that we count among our favorites.
We found out afterward that Janelle has a song called Django Jane,
which we didn't know about. Oh, we also, unbeknownst to us at the time, you know, the plantation that we picked to shoot the film is where Django was filmed.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wild. Okay. Well, I know we got to wrap here shortly, and I'm sure I could pick your brain all day long. But before we kind of wrap up with just any wisdom you have for kind of aspiring scribes or screenwriters who might not have the kind of level of access that you have on just how to keep their chins up and how to keep going, I will just mention the film one more time. Antebellum is incredibly timely. Go watch it and tell me it's not. My Lord. This movie is fantastic, and congratulations on the work, gentlemen. What is next for you? I understand that you've got a bunch of irons in the fire.
Yeah, we've been spending all this lockdown quarantine time writing throughout 2020. We were blessed to be able to write and sell our next film and TV show in 2020.
Oh, wow.
And so Rapture is up next, which is also will also be with Lionsgate.
Yeah.
Which should be going into pre-production
imminently,
you know, as soon as everything becomes a little
fingers crossed
virus. Yeah. But that one, you know, we continue to tackle issues, and that's kind of about the weaponization of organized religion as well as the state of the environment. And then Inkwell with HBO, which was actually the first thing that we wrote when we came out here.
We always wanted to write a television series for HBO. And so we didn't even, you know, everything else that we've done you know, our team would send it out and we would, you know, there would be a lot of suitors who'd be open to multiple networks. But in this case, we were really specific in wanting HBO Max. We felt like they are going to be doing some exciting stuff in the very near future. Mm-hmm. And so we just went directly to them with the show. They fell in love with it. They are really excited. And we're thrilled to be partnering with HBO and HBO Max on our first television series. I would say, segueing back to your original question about just scribes and keeping your chin up, you know, in the beginning years and the genesis of Christopher and I and our time together, it was incredibly difficult. It was incredibly challenging financially, creatively, and that I think really helped to shape who we are as artists. I think that you always have to remember, even when it feels really dark, that the writing that you're doing and what you're trying to put together may very well have a tremendous impact on the way that all of us are thinking about, you know, any sort of specific issue. And it doesn't have to be like in our case, where we tackle the environment and social justice and, you know, want to amplify a whole host of issues. We're also really obsessed with aliens. So there'd definitely be something we write about aliens. But I think that it's important to remember that with all the talent in the world, it means nothing if it is not in combination with stamina. You've got to have the stamina. Like, you know, when I taught at Miami Ad School years ago, I would tell the students that, you know, it's not that you just run down 10 miles down a hill and then up another hill. It's that you run up another hill and then through a mountain range and then down a coast and then, you know, scale a building. And you have to have the stamina to see that through. There are so many talented, extraordinarily talented people that the one ingredient that's probably of equal, if not more importance, is your determination to stay in it and to keep writing and to keep trying.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic wisdom and a great place to wrap up. Thank you to you both for taking the time to do this today, from social justice to aliens. I can't wait for all of it. So keep us in the loop. But congratulations on all of your work. It really is important.
Thank you very much. We had such a good time talking with you today. Thank you for, you know, like I said, we're famished to have conversations with other people. So
real people.
This was really great. Thank you so much.
Hey, it was truly a pleasure, and please come back again.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us for this episode of The Writer Files. And if you enjoy the podcast, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating or a review to help other writers out there find us. You can always leave a comment or a question and visit the entire archives at writerfiles.fm. And you can chat with me on Twitter at Kelton Reed. Cheers. Talk to you next week.